Chapter 16. It took 2 months of living in one room to make up his mind. He waited until the street was deserted, then slipped across the boulevard, past a design of flower gardens, and so to the door of the weapon shop. The brief fear came that the door wouldn't open, but it did, effortlessly. As he emerged from the dimness of the alcove into the shop proper, he saw the silver-haired old man sitting in a corner chair, reading under a softly bright light. The old man looked up, put aside his book, then rose to his feet. "It's Mr. Clark," he said quietly. "What can we do for you?" A faint flush crept into Ferris' cheeks. He had hoped that he would not suffer the humiliation of being recognized, but now that his fear was realized, he stood his ground stubbornly. The important thing about killing himself was that there be nobody for Creel to bury at great expense. Neither knife nor poison would satisfy that basic requirement. "I want a gun," said Farah, "that can be adjusted to disintegrate a body 6 feet in diameter in a single shot. Have you that kind?" The old man turned to his showcase and brought forth a sturdy revolver that glinted with all the soft colors of the inimitable Ordine plastic. The man said in a precise voice, "Notice the flanges on this barrel are little more than bulges. This makes the model ideal for carrying in a shoulder holster under the coat. It can be drawn very swiftly because when properly attuned, it will leap toward the reaching hand of its owner. At the moment it is attuned to me, watch while I replace it in its holster and..." The speed of the draw was amazing. The old man's fingers moved, and the gun, 4 feet away, was in them. There was no blur of movement. It was like the door the night that it had slipped from Ferris' grasp and slammed noiselessly in Constable Jor's face. Instantaneous. Farah, who had parted his lips, as the old man was explaining, to protest the needlessness of illustrating any quality of the weapon, except what he had asked for, closed them again. He stared in fascination. And something of the wonder that was here held his mind in his body. He had seen and handled the guns of soldiers, and they were simply ordinary metal or plastic things that one used clumsily like any other material substance, not like this at all, not possessed of a dazzling life of their own, leaping with an intimate eagerness to assist with all their superb power the will of their master. With a start, Farah remembered his purpose. He smiled wryly and said, "All this is very interesting, but what about the beam that can fan out?" The old man said calmly, "At pencil thickness, this beam will pierce any body except certain alloys of lead up to 400 yards. With proper adjustment of the firing nozzle, you can disintegrate a 6-foot object at 50 yards or less. This screw is the adjuster." He indicated a tiny device in the muzzle itself. "Turn it to the left to spread the beam, to the right to close it." Farah said, "I'll take the gun. How much is it?" He saw that the old man was looking at him thoughtfully. The oldster said finally, slowly, "I have previously explained our regulations to you, Mr. Clark. You recall them, of course." "Eh?" said Farah, and stopped wide-eyed. "You mean," he gasped, "those things actually apply? They're not..." Tense and cold, he finished. "All I want is a gun that will shoot in self-defense, but which I can turn on myself if I have to, or want to." "Oh, suicide," said the old man. He looked as if a great understanding had dawned on him. "My dear sir, we have no objection to you killing yourself at any time. That is your personal privilege in a world where privileges grow scantier every year. As for the price of this revolver, it's 4 credits.
"Four? Only 4 credits? Said Farah.
He stood astounded, his mind snatched from its dark purpose. Why, the plastic alone was, and the whole gun with its fine, intricate workmanship, 25 credits would have been cheap. He felt a thrill of interest. The mystery of the weapon shop suddenly loomed as vast and important as his own black destiny. But the old man was speaking again. "And now, if you will remove your coat, we can put on the holster." Automatically, Farah complied. It was vaguely startling to realize that in a few seconds he would be walking out of here, equipped for self-murder, and that there was now not a single obstacle to his death. Curiously, he was disappointed. He couldn't explain it, but somehow there had been in the back of his mind a hope that these shops might... just might... what? "What indeed?" Farah sighed, and grew aware again of the old man's voice. "Perhaps you would prefer to step out of our side door. It is less conspicuous than the front." There was no resistance in Farah.
He was conscious of the man's fingers on his arm, half guiding him, and then the old man pressed one of several buttons on the wall. So that's how it was done, and there was the door. He could see flowers beyond the opening. Without a word, he walked toward them. He was outside almost before he realized it.